Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. On the June ballot, voters will be judging the judges when they cast their ballots in the judicial races. But now some controversy has arisen over just how the County Bar Association issues its ratings for judicial candidates. Now, the Bar Association in the current election has given lacking qualifications ratings to three candidates. And they've also given a well-qualified rating to one incumbent judge who was once arrested for driving under the influence on the wrong side of the road, who pled guilty to reckless driving, and who has had several disciplinary actions against her. The three candidates who received the lacking qualifications included two of them who had had some controversies of their own. One of those was Douglas Crawford, who is facing a suspension of his state bar license, although he is fighting that suspension. The second one is Ken Gosselin. Gosselin was accused of inflating his experience and educational background. One of his opponents took him to court, and he signed a stipulation, which a judge signed requiring him to change his ballot statement. The third one, however, is Michelle Hagan, and Michelle has some fairly extensive qualifications and no disciplinary action on record, so we've invited her to come here today and speak about this whole issue. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Tell us what race you're running in.
I'm in race number 25. It's an open race, and there are two other opponents.
Right. One of those is Gosselin, who yes. We mentioned also got the lacking qualifications, and the third candidate is Brad Weinreb, who is a deputy attorney, and he was ranked qualified, the middle of the three qualifications. So, Michelle, let's talk a little bit about some of your qualifications, first of all.
I've been a lawyer for 25 years. I served as a deputy city attorney in San Diego for many years. I prosecuted child abuse and domestic violence cases. I also served as an assistant district attorney in San Francisco. I also sat as a judge pro tem. And I've been a past board member of the League of Women Voters and Lawyers Club of San Diego.
Yeah, you've also been a legal analyst on TV and radio, I understand.
Yes, and quite a bit of my career has been informing and educating the public about the legal process and how to navigate the legal landscape as a legal analyst. Right. And I'm also a certified fraud examiner as well.
And where did you get your law degree?
I went to University of San Francisco, and I'm also a proud graduate of UCSD.
Okay, very good. You also write a blog on legal issues for consumers, I understand.
Yes, I do. I started my company Trial Ready, which is actually to teach lawyers trial skills because I learned early on, having done quite a few trials myself and having supervised, I was a supervising trial attorney at the San Diego City Attorney's Office. And actually, I taught nationally and still do with the premier trial advocacy. I taught with the National Institute for Trial Advocacy. And then I started my company called Trial Ready, and that is to help attorneys and the general public to navigate and to best represent themselves in court.
Okay.
And some of the articles that I have written have been to help the public, such as if you want to dispute your attorney's fees or if it's a good idea to represent yourself in court. So my goal has always been to educate and inform the general public.
Now, for the record, have you ever had any discipline actions against you by the State Bar Association or any criminal?
No, none.
Actions, anything?
No, nothing.
Nothing. So you have an unblemished record from
that
standpoint.
Yeah, I have a stellar record. I've accomplished quite a bit in my 25-year career. You don't get to positions of being an assistant district attorney or being a judge pro tem or being a deputy city attorney or being a certified fraud examiner or being asked to be on national TV to comment on cases if you have anything. That speaks volumes about my integrity.
Now, the County Bar Association, in issuing these ratings, they're not here today. If they were, I imagine that they would say that there have been cases in the past where there were judges who had disciplinary actions, one of them was kicked off as a judge pro tem, things like that, where perhaps arguably there might be some reason to let the public know about somebody.
Well, actually, just to let you know, their reasons for their ratings are confidential. So they're not in a position where they should be or could be commenting on any reasons why.
Okay. The criteria that they give, because they're not here, I'm going to go over briefly what the criteria are that they say that they use. It's a pretty long list. It includes some obvious things like trial experience, industry work habits, fairness, and objectivity, but it also includes some things that are subjective: judicial temperament, judgment and common sense, compassion, integrity, courage, as well as any other factor that might affect the candidate's ability to serve as judge. And interestingly, education is not even listed on this list of qualifications. Maybe that's under knowledge of the law, which is on there. But it begs the question that these are issued without any explanation of why any specific judge received the rating that they did, or judicial candidate received the rating that they did. So, Michelle, do you have any insights into why you believe you may have received this negative rating?
Well, let me just say, as a fraud examiner, I think it's really important that you have credible and verifiable facts for any basis of any opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they voted the way they voted. I can only tell you that in an interview, they were not happy with the fact that I wrote about a case in which a rape victim was ordered by the judge to pay alimony to her husband.
Wow.
Who had been convicted of raping her.
So they told
convicted,
you they
I should say convicted of sodomy, actually.
So they told you they didn't like your blog entry about this man who had raped his wife, or had sodomized his wife. He was convicted?
Yeah, he was convicted and sent to prison for 6 years.
And she had to pay alimony.
Yeah, she was ordered by the judge to pay alimony. And, you know, I think most people would be very shocked and surprised about that. And,
yeah.
You
is
know,
that,
I believe...
Is that judge still on the bench, by the way?
Yes, he's still on the bench.
Interesting.
And what's even more significant is, you know, a law was passed because of this case to curb any judge in the future from doing something like this.
You were active in getting that
law
passed,
I understand. Yeah, I was active in helping the victim get the law passed. But they're not calling out the governor who signed the law. They're not calling out the new Speaker of Assembly who backed the law. And they're not calling out the local DA.
So how do you feel about the fact that apparently if a lawyer speaks out about an injustice that they feel that they have witnessed, that could come back to haunt you if you decide to run to be a judge someday? And to be clear, by the way, you spoke out about this and wrote that particular blog entry before you were even running as a judge, correct?
Right, but, you know, as a citizen, you don't give up your opinions. And I've written about a lot of different things. And I understand their, you know, whatever their hesitation is, and maybe it's unsettling to them. But you know what? I don't look the other way in the face of injustice. I was a prosecutor for many years, and I have done defense work, and I've sat as a judge pro tem. I think, you know, we become lawyers. We're in the best position to know when things go awry. And the Constitution is important to all of us. And part of the Constitution is the right of free speech. You don't give that up just because you become a lawyer. So in my intention has been, and I think they misunderstood my intention. My intention has always been to educate and inform the public. And this is something they need to know about. You know, our courtrooms are not supposed to be places of secrecy. And opinions and decisions and orders are not to be places of secrecy. You know, all of this, it's the public courtroom. And, you know, everybody is held to account. And, you know, as sitting as a judge, judges get challenged all the time. I mean, have they ever tried a case or been in arraignment court when judges are yelled at about this and that? I mean, it happens all the time.
Sure.
If I had put it in an appellate brief, what is the difference? So, I mean, with all due respect to them, I just, you know, I'm a bit surprised that they would give. I have an incredible record, and I've handled criminal cases and civil cases, and you really don't get that with, you know, judicial candidates. I mean, I'm the real deal here, and I am just trying to be a good guardian of justice.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for enlightening us on that, Michelle. Now, judicial candidates, there are some limits, of course, on what they can say. They're not allowed to talk about specific issues or cases that come before them on the bench, obviously. But, Michelle, back to your comment about judicial candidates having free speech. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that for us?
Yeah, I mean, we all have free speech. And you have to think, you know, Lady Justice wears a blindfold. She doesn't wear a gag. You know, we're allowed to speak up, and we should, as lawyers, when we know, and having handled domestic violence and child abuse cases for many years, I feel that I have a responsibility to keep an eye on what's going on in the courtrooms. And after 25 years and trying many, many cases, both criminal and civil, I think it's important that we also participate in the process.
Now, the New York Times, interestingly, just this week came out with a very timely article titled, How Not to Pick Judges. Can you share some highlights? I believe you brought the article into to our
right.
attention, Michelle. Can you share a few of the findings reported in that story.
Right. Well, you know, you can put my opinion aside as to commenting on their opinion as to what my qualifications are. But, you know, we have a study here that was done, a quite extensive study, where they looked at 52 years of data on the American Bar Association doing ratings of judicial nominees. And what the professor, the researcher who did this study, she has a PhD from Harvard. She has a JD from Stanford. And this study is supported by the Harvard Center for American Political Studies. And it's this study came out in the Journal of Law and Courts just in the spring of 2014. And some of the highlights are, I mean, basically what this study is telling us is that the ratings aren't predictive of anything. They don't, if you're qualified, if you are ranked as well qualified, qualified, or lacking qualifications, it doesn't mean that you're going to be a good judge or not a good judge. They looked at what's called reversal rates.
In other words, if a judge's decision is appealed, how often it's reversed by a higher
court. How often it's reversed. So that was one indicator they looked at to judge whether or not a judge would be a good judge for the bench. And what they found out is these ratings that are done by the ABA and other bar associations don't correlate with the performance of the judge. So why are we doing these ratings?
Very intriguing question. Now, I'm wondering what the options are here. Let's go back to our local county bar association for a moment. What are some of the options we could look at? For example, I guess one option would be they just give up and don't do these ratings at all. On the other hand, that puts us back to the situation where sometimes maybe there is a real red flag and the public needs a way to know that. Is there something in between, no ratings at all? What are the different options that could be done? Let's discuss
that
first.
Well, okay, first of all, let's start with the premise. I mean, let's start with the factual finding, which is the study that says the ratings aren't predictive. So why are we doing the ratings? Mm-hmm. If we were to do the ratings, it needs to be transparent and there needs to be verifiable facts.
Criteria, in other words.
Criteria, yeah. And, you know, as a certified fraud examiner, I look at things such as control for bias. Mm-hmm. I look at the methodology used. I look at the basis for the reason. None of that were given. It's not transparent at all.
So, for example, if they were to have a list of law schools that were rated, you know, for example, if someone came from a law school that was not credentialed or something like that.
Right. Well, this study that was done looked at, you know, where you went to law school. I mean, that was one of the factors they threw into the study to determine whether or not it was predictive or not.
Interesting.
Okay. Well,
was it?
No. See, it's not. Yeah. I mean, it's the other important fact about the study is that it shows that the ratings disadvantage minority and female candidates.
Very important.
They tend to get lower ratings, and that impacts who sits on the bench. Because if women and minorities are not rated highly enough, then they don't get nominated to the bench or voted into office, right?
So are you saying this is sort of an old boys' network where these career judges and prosecutors and attorneys, largely male, are basically...
Well, I'm not theorizing anything. I'm just relying on what the facts show us. And that, you know, in this study, which is quite extensive, shows us, you know, that it's not predictive, these ratings. Why are we doing these ratings? And it doesn't screen out any possible bias. The example of that is the fact that the women and the minorities are getting lower ratings, lower rankings. If it has nothing to do with your qualifications and your experience, why are they getting lower ratings?
Very interesting. Now, I've also heard the idea thrown out there that maybe we should have somebody other than just the Bar Association, you know, if there were to be any ratings of judges or judicial candidates, that perhaps they should bring in, you know, victims' rights advocates or other kinds of groups from the community.
Okay, that's assuming the ratings are predictive. We know they're not, because historically we've got 52 years of data that shows that they're not predictive of how you're going to perform. But if you want to make it a transparent process, which it should be, just put up the qualifications of the candidate. This is where they went to school. This is the area they practiced. Other states do it. I think it's Michigan and Ohio does it.
There you go.
Or Washington and Ohio.
You could certainly list, say, disciplinary actions.
Yeah, why not do objective factors as opposed to giving opinions which are subjective? And you don't know. This is a political race, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know what people's agendas are or what their motivations are.
Yeah, so potentially you could have political agenda, although I will say in this case the ratings have been on both sides of the aisle.
Right. Well, the ratings are also very questionable when you take a judge, a sitting judge, who's been three times disciplined by the Judicial Commission and also has a conviction, which, by the way...
We're talking about Judge Lisa Shaw, by the way, who, for the record, is not your opponent.
No, but she was rated also by the same, by the County Bar Association. And even with three disciplines and a conviction for reckless driving, she gets well qualified. I mean, what does that say about the integrity of
and the
this rating? Yeah, and the objectivity. The other big issue that I have, and this is new to me. I mean, I haven't run for political office. I'm just a lawyer who's trying to make sure that we have well-qualified judges sitting on the bench.
Why is it important for people to care about who gets elected as a judge? I know that may sound like a silly question, but I imagine there's a lot of people out there probably thinking, I've never been arrested. Or
because it matters. Because if you go through a divorce, it matters. If you risk having your children taken away from you, or your home being taken away from you, or you have a botched medical surgery, or you have a speeding ticket, it does matter. Justice should not be tampered with. We care about justice in this country, and we want fair-minded, impartial, experienced judges. The county bar is trying to do the right thing by providing information, but the problem is all they're giving us is an opinion. They're not telling the voters where we went to law school. They're not telling the voters what areas we practice. Have we been disciplined? All that stuff is objective, and you can leave it for the voters to decide. Voters are smart enough to do their own research and not rely on opinions of others. They'll go out. You can Google Michelle Hagan. You can go to trialready.com. You can go to Hagan for Judge. And the information is out there. And in fact, what's interesting to me is the county bar has been doing ratings since 1978. And I run around the county talking to voters, and voters are saying to me, there's not enough information. We don't know anything about judges. Well, why am I the one who puts together a list, 10 things to know about judicial elections, to educate and inform voters? Why isn't that information out there?
And I do need to throw out there that if you go to the eastcountymagazine.org website, we do have information up there about candidates in this race. Now, the other issue that I've heard is this whole issue of whether some attorneys who are involved in this rating system may sometimes have cases before some of the judges, in the case of incumbent judges, that they're actually rating, which would not apply in your case since you're not running against an incumbent, Michelle. But I'd like to ask your opinion about that.
Here's the analogy I give people. You know, if we don't let football players pick referees, why are we letting attorneys pick judges? I mean, why it hasn't occurred to the County Bar Association that there's an inherent conflict of interest when they decide to rate a candidate. So let's say, for instance, you're my client, we go to court, and we have an opposing counsel. Opposing counsel gave the judge a well-qualified rating and contributed to the judge's campaign, gave the judge $500. How do you think you're going to feel if you get a decision that's not in your favor and you find out about this? Why are we allowing attorneys, the very people that are likely to appear in front of these judges, the opportunity to rate a candidate who they may appear in front of? And why are we allowing attorneys to contribute to the political campaigns of judicial candidates? I mean, people are fed up with money and politics, and especially with justice. That is a place that needs to be hands-off. And everybody needs to be extremely transparent.
Very good. We're going to pause a moment for station identification, and then we're going to be back with Michelle Hagan, a judicial candidate and author of a blog on legal issues for consumers. And she's going to read us 10 tips of what the public ought to know when voting in judicial elections.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
We're back with Michelle Hagan, who is a judicial candidate, but also Michelle runs the blog TrialReady.com, where she has tips for consumers, including some tips on what you should know about judicial races.
So in keeping with trying to educate and inform voters, I put together 10 things to know about judicial elections. And I get asked these questions as I'm out talking with voters. So number one is that this Superior Court judges are elected by the people in a countywide election. It's not a citywide election. So if you live in Cardiff, Ramona, or Oceanside, you vote for a judge. And judges, when they are vacate the seat, the governor is given the opportunity to temporarily appoint a judge until that seat is up for election. And judges sit for 6 years. It's a 6-year term as a Superior Court judge. And another thing you need to know is that there are no contribution limits in judicial races. In other words, individuals, businesses, PACs, etc., can give as much as they want to judicial campaigns. Judges and judicial candidates are not allowed to publicly endorse or oppose non-judicial candidates. So what that means is, as a judicial candidate, I can't endorse somebody running for mayor, city council, supervisor, any of that. We can only endorse judicial candidates. And in San Diego County, there are approximately 131 Superior Court judges. About 45 of the judges are up for election every 2 years, with their name only appearing on the ballot when they are being challenged. If the judge is not challenged, they are automatically elected to a new 6-year term after the November general election. If a judge decides to withdraw from the election during the nomination period, then the seat becomes open for 5 days to allow candidates to file and run for the open seat. If one candidate receives over 50% of the votes, they are elected to the bench in the primary election. Otherwise, the top two vote-getters face a runoff in the November general election. It's also important that judges remain impartial and fair. And to uphold impartiality, judges and judicial candidates are not allowed to make statements on issues, cases, or controversies, as such matters are likely to come before them while they're on the bench. So, for instance, I get asked all the time, what's my position on X and Y? Unlike a city council candidate, I can't talk about those issues because they may come before me when I'm on the bench. And Superior Court judges generally preside over jury trials, bench, or otherwise known as judge trials, hearings and motions on criminal and civil matters. Superior Court judgments, convictions, and orders may be appealed to the Court of Appeal, the California Supreme Court, and may be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court. Each judicial race is designated a seat number. For instance, in my race, it's seat 25. The seat number is just a random numerical designation assigned for ballot purposes. The seat number does not refer to any department, courthouse, or area of the county. I get asked that question all the time. What region would the judge be presiding? It's the whole county. A Superior Court judge can be assigned to any division, civil, criminal, family law, probate, juvenile, etc. It's the presiding judge who determines the length of the assignment and which courthouse you will be assigned to. And the qualifications to run for judge is you need to be an attorney who's a U.S. citizen, a registered voter, and a member of the California State Bar for 10 years. Then you could run for judicial office. I hope these 10 things to know about judicial elections have been very helpful to you. Thank you.
Michelle, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. And we certainly are reaching out to the Bar Association as well, in all fairness, and inviting them if they wish to come on and tell us their side of the story about the whole rating system. We would certainly welcome the opportunity to do that. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.